Welcome to the Standing Committee on Transport and Public Works. Just for the record, it is the 20th of August. My name is Dalen Mitchell and I'm the chairperson of this committee. To my left is the procedural officer, and to his left is the assistant procedural officer for this committee. I'm going to firstly welcome HOD, the team minister. Members, I'm going to allow you an opportunity to introduce yourself just for the record, and then I'll hand over to the HOD.
My further left to the chairperson, I'm Derek America.
Andreas van der Weesthuizen.
Mulama Mvimbi.
And Brett Heron.
HOD, just for the record.
Thank you, chairperson. Jackie Gooch, head of department.
I'm Bongo Smatigizela, Minister of the Department of Transport and Public Works.
Good afternoon, Chantal Smith, DDG Finance.
Good afternoon, I'm Richard Peterson. I'm the Chief Director responsible for the Expanded Public Works Program.
Thank you very much. And if the gentleman in the back, if you can just come move forward to the microphone, just for the record.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Tashreek Miller from PMG.
Thank you very much. Just a warm welcome to the translators at the back. Been acknowledged. Thank you. Members, I'm going to go. Minister HOD, I don't know if you have any opening remarks or if we can go straight into the agenda. All right. Members, the first point on the agenda is the quarterly performance report, April 2019 to June 2019. I'm going to allow the department to do the presentation. Can you please dot down your questions? And then at the end of the presentation, we'll allow you an opportunity to question and interrogate. I just want to upfront state that the minister will be leaving us during the course of this meeting. So when you need to leave, you are more than welcome to be excused. All right. Thank you, HD.
Chair, thank you very much, and to the members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to make this presentation. I also understand that besides the first time we met, which was a briefing meeting, this is the first time that we're presenting our quarterly report, so we did decide to include some introductory aspects in terms of contextualization for the committee. So please forgive me if these are things that you're already well aware of, and I will move through them relatively swiftly, but just to then try and give you a sense. So as a department, we are required to make sure that we include what is called national customized indicators that are set by the sector or for the sector, and we are required to include in the annual performance plan and the strategic plan. And we've been aware of the number of provincial regulatory entity hearings that are conducted. And so both across the transport as well as the public works sectors nationally, there are these national, what are called customized indicators that have to be included. Then there are provincial indicators, so potentially linked to the provincial priorities that are set, which we are able to determine and put in. And then obviously then the departmental indicators, so those that are then also important for us based upon our mandate and the areas that we wish to focus. When we prepare the annual report or the annual performance plan, remember it's on the back of a strategic plan that we're now in the last year of that particular strategic plan. So 2019-20 is the last year of the plan. And therefore, the strategic indicators as well as the performance indicators that we're reporting on were actually set practically 5 years ago and are carried then through. And all the way through the five-year period, we have to understand that things do change along the way. So the economy has changed, that the state of the situation have been impacted by a range of matters, which include the implications around the construction sector that we are all well aware of, and so on. So when we look at what the targets were and what our performance is against those, one has to understand that the context has shifted in comparison to, at times, what was originally set, certainly 5 years or even last year, in terms of the performance of the department. And so we've tried to give you a bit of a sense of what some of those factors are. So even before we give you what the outcomes are, it's important to understand where some of our performance starts to be adjusted. So, for example, our provincial traffic team, while we have indicators around the number of vehicles that are potentially stopped on our roads that are weighed at weigh bridges, when there are service delivery protests or there are issues that occur, felt fires and so on, our provincial traffic services are redeployed to be able to respond to those particular incidents. So, of course, what was planned, what was anticipated to be undertaken is no longer, and that results in ultimately an underperformance in some of the targets. And explainable, but certainly needs to be understood. We certainly have within our environment, if we think about the infrastructure space, construction companies that are under pressure, some of them, as we know, going into voluntary business rescue and others, and then some difficulties in terms of contractors that don't perform as well, given some of the economic situations that we do have, cash flow problems and others. And that then all has an impact. I'm not going to go through every single one. You know, you've got the presentation to read. So within the department, obviously, we also have, from a context point of view, a growing demand for services while the input costs are increasing. So every year, while we say, right, this is what we are anticipating doing in terms of delivery, the costs are increasing all the time. And there is a point, and you will see in terms of the presentation when we finally get to also to the annual report at the end of this year, that not all targets are actually met in terms of the five-year cycle. Then, but on the positive side, we do spend our budget, and that's not to say that the money is dumped or that it is misspent. You know, again, as I say, when costs go up, you're having to balance those particular aspects. We do consider as well that in some respects the indicators, particularly the customized indicators that you see from a national perspective, don't necessarily speak to and capture all the work that is being done. And then the point that 5 years, obviously, we've had in terms of clean audits of the department, which speaks to some of the governance sort of processes and principles in the department. So just to kind of give you a sense, in the upcoming slides, the colors that we have used and to try and identify how we have categorized our performance in terms of where we have overachieved, and that's on the basis of 150% or more above the target, achieved between 100 and 149, partially, and then not achieved. If I can say that no performance data for the expanded public works program for the first quarter was collected, but during that time, the national system on which these things have to be captured was actually closed for the national department to make enhancements to that system. It is now open, and we are now busy capturing the performance information. The other point to flag to, if I may, is the first quarter performance that is being reported on now is preliminary information. We are given until we report on the second quarter to be able to validate the performance information from the first quarter. So please understand that some of it, because it comes from regional offices and others, takes a little bit of time. So the numbers that we then see when we look at the second quarter and having confirmed the first, the numbers may shift. All right. So what may look like potentially underperformance now could actually shift to performance when the data is then validated by the end of the second quarter. So this particular graphic then has tried to give you an overall view. As we presented as the department, we have 6 budget programs in the department. So you see them listed there in terms of the budget programs, 6 budget programs, and then our trading entity of government motor transport. We do not have any performance indicators set for the first quarter in program 1. Overall, you'll see an underperformance here, an underachievement in Program 2 in the Provincial Public Works Program, and I'll then get to that in some detail. And you'll see an underperformance in one area, which is the EPWP, which, in terms of that, we'll again get to that later on. Generally, we see here 11 Of the targets have been partially achieved, 12 completely achieved, and then obviously 3 in terms of the overperformance that's been listed. But I think it's also important not to just see numbers, but it is also important to try and get a sense of what the performance actually is. And so we're trying to give you, even though there's no performance target for the first quarter in Program 1, we're trying to give you a sense of what we achieved in the first quarter in the administration program. So Misaki Sizwe bursary program that we've mentioned in the initial briefing to you, there were new bursaries awarded to 127 youth during the first quarter. And you see just a picture of everybody there who received bursaries in the first quarter. And then we also welcomed the Premier's Advancement of Youth Program, 70 new interns into the department as well. On Program 2, Provincial Public Works, I can indicate here that we commenced the refurbishment of the Neisner High School boarding hostel, which was damaged by fire in June 2017, and then 2 new clinics that were under construction. The replacement facility also is underway for the Panorama Primary School in Frederiksberg, and that will accommodate up to 1,200 and 40 learners when that is completed. It also, just for information, will have 12 foundation phase classrooms, 8 intermediate classrooms, 8 senior phase. It will also include 2 multi-purpose classrooms, science laboratory, a multimedia center, hall, and sports fields when it is completed. Now, I mentioned in public works infrastructure that there was the underperformance that you saw overall in terms of the red bar charts, and those are specifically within the number of capital projects, infrastructure projects that were completed within the agreed time period, and then the number of capital infrastructure projects completed within the agreed budget. Now, particularly, these comprise 3 components. Those projects that we deliver for the Department of Education, the Department of Health, and obviously the general infrastructure projects. We do, year upon year, have a misalignment between the target setting and the budget finalization and the project finalization. Remember, we've mentioned before that the budget for health and education resides with those departments, but we are required to include the performance in terms of delivery in our annual performance plans. The annual performance plans have to be completed if in terms of the budget process by February of each year, but the budgets are then only finalized at the back end of February, the beginning of March timeline. So immediately you can see that when there are potentially budget cuts or there's a shift slightly right at the end in terms of the budget process, immediately there's a disconnect between the targets that have already been set and published in the annual performance plan with the budget process that moves slightly out of alignment. And then, as is its nature with infrastructure, with the way that it occurs, projects are adjusted, scope has to change, priorities need to shift potentially. And so when we then say, well, we have planned for certain things to be done, either in projects to be completed or for the maintenance work and the scope to be done, if a scope adjustment is made partway through that particular project, that immediately is going to move, that mean that the timeline shifts and potentially from one quarter into the next, which makes meeting these targets that we set actually very difficult within the department. It's not so I can indicate that that is a problem for us, and then fundamentally the scope even that you see here in the maintenance projects, particularly here, in terms of particularly on the general infrastructure side of things, we have had to adjust the number of the projects, 19 of them, in terms of their scope, and as a result they are going to roll over to the on the road side, which is ultimately Program 3, the road infrastructure side of things, I can indicate here that the roadworks project was completed in this particular timeline. And this will be actually opening that project in the next week or so. And the new road surface, just trying to give you a sense of what about. We obviously widened it, looked at improved from a safety point of view. There was 16 million rand of the 186 spent on targeted enterprises, 20 million or so on suppliers, and then also on emerging contractors for that project. We've also then looked at Langeberg in terms of the roads project there in that particular area. One of the major projects that is continuing is, of course, the Montague-Ashton road project that I'm sure the members would be aware of, and that is particularly one that has been impacted, as you would be aware, from the Basil Reed company that went into business rescue. We then had to terminate that particular contract and then get a new contractor on site and so on. So has had a fundamental impact on the timeline and a delay on that specific project. There have been two other projects in Bonnievale that have recently been completed, and then also other projects that have been processed in the Langeberg region. To give you a sense of the Hoekval Road as well, these are roadworks that are near the wilderness that have been completed, and just to give you a sense of what has been achieved. While this one in here, the M1 Old Oak Bridge, of course, that was the bridge itself was completed actually last year. The N1 and the road opening was completed in the first quarter of this particular total of 487 million rands worth of project. To give you a sense here of the performance across the road site, and I have a number of kilometers of gravel roads upgraded to surface standards that you see in terms of the first performance indicator here. The completion, the numbers here were on the basis of completing the 8-cake pass, District Road 1487, and it actually was completed earlier than expected. It was completed in the fourth quarter of last year. So again, literally by the 31st of March, it was already included in the targets of the APP of this year, which shows therefore an underperformance in the first quarter of this year, but there was an overperformance in the last quarter of last year. The number of full-time equivalents in terms of jobs created, they were on average, the employment duration of the work opportunities was lower than estimated, and we were unable to identify sufficient people to work in construction sites. Here the number of kilometers of gravel roads re-gravel wasn't achieved in terms of the target, and we had to ship that program changes on the availability of gravel and so on, and the program changes were being shipped to the municipality as our agent delivering that. On program 4, transport operations, as we've mentioned before, this particular program fundamentally deals with matters around public transport. And one of the things that the committee was aware of was that in the first quarter, we closed the comments process on the Western Cape Rail Transport Bill. The comments were due by the 15th of May, and those are now being processed, including getting input from senior counsel and so on, a number of matters raised from that public participation process. The number of trips subsidized that you see, this was based upon the number of trips in terms of a calculation with the Golden Arrow bus services, and that you see is slightly lower than what was targeted. And on that, it's not that the number of trips were not operated. When the subsidy allocation is then finally made in terms of the Golden Arrow, the Public Transport Operations Grant, based upon that particular grant, the number of trips and kilometers to be operated has to be adjusted in order to ensure that we do not go over that particular grant in terms of spending, and therefore the number of kilometers operated is reduced. On Program 5, Transport Regulation, and this is where there's work particularly within the provincial traffic management and other teams, and just to give you a sense about some of the awareness campaigns that were run in the first quarter in Graafwater, and then the new junior traffic training center at the Protea Primary School in Napier, that was also completed and provided in the first quarter of this year. give you a sense of some of the activities, particularly on driver fatigue, 3,376 public transport vehicles that were recorded traveling on certain provincial routes during the driver fatigue management program over the Easter weekend. Of that, 1,720 vehicles were stopped and checked, and 99 of those drivers were actually asked to park their cars and take a break to get a rest. So they had been driving for too long and were deemed to be fatigued. And the traffic officers are empowered to actually take your car keys and ask you to please rest so that you are then not a danger to yourself, to your passengers and other road users from then onwards. And we do say that there were no major public transport crashes recorded over the Easter weekend. Then to get to the indicators and what the performance was, you do see there the underperformance, as I mentioned, number of vehicles weighed and number of vehicles stopped and checked in that particular time period. And again, specifically there, because we do have to at times adjust the deployment of our traffic officers when other incidents occurred. We were two below the actual number of Taxi Association AGMs held, or I actually think it was three, if I am correct, my apologies, three below what the target was, and those would then be carried over. On the expanded public works program side of things, Mr. Peterson will give a bit of detail about EPWP itself, but just to give you a sense that we did host information sessions on the contractor development program, and that particularly is aimed at developing emerging contractors in the Western Cape. For government motor transport, slightly below the target of the number of vehicle inspections that were carried out and the number of policy and guideline circulars that were issued. The guidelines and policy circulars, as we put there, is demand driven. You know, it's really, if something is required, then we issue a particular guideline or circular if we find there's an incident. We're not going to just issue more circulars or something than what is required and give necessary so-called red tape. So we do set a target of 6 generally per month, per quarter, but only 5 needed to be issued in the period under review. Chair, with that, I will try to answer whatever questions the committee may have, and I may have to phone a friend. Thank you.
Thank you, HOD. Members, can you please indicate the page that you're asking questions on, and in the interest of transparency and fairness, if you can limit yourself to 3 questions, and then we'll get back to a second round. Honourable America, then Honourable Heron, Honourable Van der Westhuizen, and then Bimby.
Thank you, Chair. Page 13 of the pack is 13.13. I was curious to know about the number of capital infrastructure projects completed within agreed time period, as well as the number of capital infrastructure projects completed within the agreed budget. And I think the HOD has given context to that this juncture in terms of where the budget resides and reporting periods that, you know, could sort of present us with that kind of misalignment. So, in a way, I don't know if there's anything else that I possibly have missed out there, because if one look at the percentage that's been presented here, is that within a great time is, you know, to what extent does the budget imperatives impact so hugely on the particular completion of a particular project that it is taking that long to complete. And that's one. And that brings me to the second one on page 15. It's good and well to say that the Gouda project is complete. completed, the question I would like to ask is whether it was completed within the agreed time and within budget, and if not, why not? And then lastly, Chair, on page program three, transport infrastructure, page 18. If I look at the reconstruction and the towards the middle bar, the number of FTEs created, full-time equivalent, 85%, and somehow this particular presentation, it is, I don't clearly understand it, because we have number of jobs created, 179%, number of full-time equivalents, 85%, then we have youths, 188%, and women, 204%, and people living with disabilities. Now, if one, take the aggregate of all the jobs created, is my understanding correct to interpret that 85% as full-time equivalent jobs that were created from the 100, let alone if we leave the women, disability and all of this out. So did we create 85% full-time jobs and not the majority EPWP jobs? That's the question. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Honourable America. Actually, just for logistics, can I do an entire round, so it will be 12 questions, and then we can do follow-ups afterwards. Members, are you in agreement with that? Honourable Heron?
Thanks, Chair. My first question is, I only have two questions. The first one's on page 15. It's not really about page 15, but you raised emerging contractors in when you presented slide 15. Is there a standard requirement for emerging contractors to be part of all of the contracts that you put out? So is there a percentage of the value of the work that needs to go to emerging subcontractors and local labour? And then, if you've got that, if I can turn to page 21, which is the subsidised trips on public transport. I'm wondering about the number. There's 316,000, I think that's the figure. And I'm looking at the last published IRT report from the City of Cape Town, which was for their quarterly figures for the My City service, and they're showing 3.5 million passenger trips in a quarter on the My City service, and we know the My City service is a fraction of the size of the Golden Arrow bus service. So there's either a difference in the how you're defining it, and maybe it'd be good if there was a standard definition for passenger trips that are being subsidized, because the My City service is also subsidized either by the PTNG or by the city's rates, but we can't have 3.5 million and only 300,000.
Thank you. Honourable van der Westhuizen.
Thank you, Chair. Just three questions. We learned about the testing for driver fatigue, and you say traffic officers are entitled to then ask, but then you use the word ask them to stop driving, etc. Do you need stronger legislation in that regard to be able to force drivers to take a break, or even to make it an offence if drivers should keep on driving longer than a certain or beyond a certain measure of fatigue? The second one is, in terms of targets, I understand that you sometimes have to deviate, and I think with budgets, which is more familiar to me, there's often an explanation why you're over budget or under budget, etc. But my question is, would you be able to point out to us which of these targets are the so-called nationally customized targets, and which are the, what I would then call, provincial targets that you've set for yourself? And then thirdly, the N1 Old Oak Bridge seems to have been quite an expensive capital project. And to what extent are we able to raise money either from Central Treasury or so beyond the normal equity share that the province is getting for such infrastructure projects? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Mbembe.
Repeating the questions that have been raised already, because I know that most of the pages that I'm going to ask is already been asked, but differently probably. Put out on page 21 on the golden arrow. Is it possible that to get if you can quantify that in terms of rand and cents, how much is it of those number of trips? And then maybe also related to that, the golden arrow bus, public transport buses, are they the only buses we are subsidizing in the Western Cape? Just out of interest, really. Are there any other bus services we are subsidizing in the province? It would be just interesting to know. Also, on page 24, on fatigue as well, I think it's a very good program, but can you really detect if someone is really fatigued? Because I know that can contribute, it contributes a lot to the number of accidents, which is a good program. On the same basis, we can detect if there's alcohol in somebody's body. Is there no way we can detect the reason? Because some people you can say, no, we think we must stop because we've got fatigue. But you say, no, I don't have fatigue. Is there a scientific way that we can measure fatigue the same way we can measure alcohol? We should be able to. If need be, we can develop something like that. Minister, it might be something we can look into, because fatigue really contributes a lot of road accidents. But there's a big no there. Is that true? Is that real, that there were no public crashes during that Easter weekend? You know, if it's no, it's good. That means it's actually, it's a job well done. But is it really no? On page 25, I think that one went on very quickly for me. That then there's that you're supposed to have a number of road safety awareness program. There is no bar chart. It's empty. Does it mean that nothing happened on that? Or if you maybe you can just elaborate on that. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. All right. I'm going to allow you to respond now. Members, when your questions are being answered, if you have follow-ups, just please indicate so that we exhaust that question, so that we don't have to come back to that.
Chair, thank you very much. Do you mind if I start from the bottom up? Freshest in the memory. The number of road safety awareness programs, there's no bar chart. There was a zero target for that particular quarter, so there's nothing being reported on for that particular quarter. Then the no is attached to the word no major. So there have been times, as you'd be aware, where we land up with a crash with a minibus taxi, where we have a large number of fatalities, or with a long-distance bus or so on. And certainly this past Easter, we didn't have any major crashes with public transport vehicles. Fatigue, and I'm going to link the two, if I may. There were two questions linked to fatigue. Was that I am led to believe that there are ways, not necessarily scientific from a breathalyzer point of view, but there are scientific ways for them to actually check whether somebody is fatigued. Because so the fatigue awareness also happens in terms of roadblocks with people from our health services and other types of services that actually work with us in terms of the fatigue awareness programs. We also have, where we work, particularly for public transport vehicles, with the program with the City of Cape Town and our team on long-distance traveling over the festive periods, where when a public transport vehicle leaves, particularly Jogradi station, they actually put a sticker on the vehicle with the time and the detail that the vehicle has left that particular interchange. And when it is then picked up by a traffic officer en route, they do a determination, obviously, in terms of the time that it's taken, is it the same driver that's driving, and so on, to then also determine as an additional step. You know, if you've got to that particular point far too quickly, it means that you haven't every 2 hours or so taken a rest, even if it's just for 15 minutes, half an hour, and so on. So there are other mechanisms that they do also utilize. The point about the fatigue, I must say, our traffic officers tell me that they are fully empowered in terms of legislation to take somebody's keys, tell them to park, rest, and then return the keys to them when they believe that they have rested sufficiently. So in terms of the current legislation. So no, maybe I've just put it too softly, but they are, as far as I'm aware, fully empowered to do so in terms of the current legislation, and nothing needs to necessarily be changed in that regard.
Well, can I just ask, to the extent that they have been able to fine people for driving, because, you know, asking is a different thing from when you fine somebody and you have to defend yourself in court.
No, through you, Chair, to my knowledge, there isn't any offence listed in the schedule for driving fatigued, if I could put it that way, no. So I don't think that that's something that they issue fines for at this point in time. But as I say, they don't have to ask. They can say, based upon X, Y, and Z, we are hereby taking your keys, your vehicle is parked, and you now rest. Then to come back to the others about the subsidization with the rand and cents and where the gas are the only ones, no. The province, through a partnership with the George Municipality, also subsidizes services that are being operated in the George Municipal Area of the Go George service. So there are subsidized services that are also operated there. And then obviously the City of Cape Town also provides subsidies in terms of the My City bus services that are operated, that there is funding through grants and so on, and I think even utilizing city rates, I'm not quite sure the makeup of their revenue approach, but there are also services that are subsidized through the My City services that are contracted to the City of Cape Town. In terms of the number of kilometers that are operated, if you're trying to get a sense, based upon this being pretty much the first quarter of the year, and that the public transport operations grant is in the region of R1 billion, this amounts to about 250 million rands worth of subsidy that is paid to Golden Arrow. Then, if I may, I'm going to pick up the point about the passenger trips and so on. Our definition, I think, is different. These are trips, these are not passenger trips, so that are calculated. Linked to our annual performance plan, it is on the website and it is also attached in the APP. We are required to put what's called technical indicator descriptors. So for every single indicator in our annual performance plan, there is a description that is then outlined as to how that indicator is measured, what the source is of the information that is utilized for that particular reporting process. So through you, Chair, to the Honourable Member, obviously, yes, based upon the number difference, they are clearly being calculated differently. And these are trips in terms of vehicle trips and not passenger trips. So if you think about the My City would be calculating per vehicle trip X number of passengers on that particular vehicle, which then amounts to eventually adds up to the X many million passenger trips that are being reported on, as opposed to, in this instance, which is vehicle trips.
Can I just...
Honourable Hira?
Yeah, just quickly, I mean, do you have a calculation for passenger trips as well, for GAVs as well, so you can actually do a comparison or not?
I will do a check. I think we do get some of those information, but that is not one of the national indicators that is required. And then, if I may, I'm going to then jump to the question about the indicators. I don't have at my fingertips which ones are national or not. Again, in our annual performance plan, there is a little asterisk attached to every single indicator that is a national customized indicator in the annual performance plan. So I don't have them at hand. The bulk of these, if I can say, that we are reporting on here are actually national customized indicators. I would probably be so bold, and I've not done a calculation, but I would probably say about 95% or so of these are the national customized indicators. Some of them are a little bit weird in the way that they are formulated, and it is a bit of a give and take between, you know, across the sector, because it means that every province is required to report on it. And so it doesn't always necessarily fit the way that we do our work very easily, if I could put it that way. If I could clarify, the 487 million was not the cost of just the Old Oak Bridge. That was for the full upgrade, third lanes of the N1 plus the Old Oak Bridge, etc. So that complete project. I don't want you to think that we spent 487 million replacing a single bridge. I should be fired if that was the case. But your question about raising funds from other sources is a valid one. The department has put forward actually a bid to National Treasury to try and bid for money from the National Large Infrastructure Project Fund that was set aside by the President, and we're actually going tomorrow to National Treasury to lobby and to answer some questions for what we have submitted for two large-scale infrastructure projects. There are also times where we work with farmers and others who sometimes are also prepared to put some money on the table in terms of projects, and then even with one, I could say, that we are now going into the planning phase with the municipality, the Drakensberg municipality, that in order to ensure that a particular road is upgraded from a development point of view, there were additional development levies that were then asked by the municipality that are then allocated and provided to us to help to contribute to fund a road upgrade. So we do and are trying to find a myriad of ways to access additional funding for kind of large infrastructure projects that are required and road projects particularly that are necessary. Then I think that was that particular one. Then the emerging contractors, what the department does is it utilizes for projects that are over a 5 million rand quantum that we estimate, we go through a process of what's called an empowerment impact assessment. It's one of the projects, one of the teams that is actually in Mr. Peterson's unit, where we have a guideline that an empowerment impact assessment is undertaken, an MPIA, for us, and what it aims to do is consider what is the project that we're looking at, are there opportunities where labor, what kind of labor is available in the surrounding area, the kind of skill sets that people have, can they be matched to the project that we're looking at, so local suppliers, potentially small contractors in the area or surrounds, and then what we do is based upon that, we set targets, we put them into the tender documentation of our contracts, and those are then set as targets for the contractor to then tender on, and they are then monitored and assessed through the performance of that particular contract by the contractor and reported on. So we would, for example, say a minimum of 10% of the local supply of, let's assume there was a sand mine, I'm just making an example, was in the area, 10% of the sand being utilized for that particular project must come from this particular geographic area, and that is then monitored. So there are percentages set as minimum targets to be achieved by the contractor. We also then, as you see, have a contractor development program in order to try to support contractors and empower them to get the necessary skills to move from one grade to the next in terms of the CIDB grading process, again also run through Mr. Peterson's team. I don't know whether Chantel or Mr. Peterson, you want to add anything? CFO.
Maybe just one additional item, and that is, as far as subcontracting is concerned, what we do is when we put together an infrastructure project, we measure the bill of quantities to the very last item or estimate, and we then dictate in the specification that that kind of work, which doesn't necessarily fall under the overarching category. In other words, if you have a general building and there's a portion of it that includes electrical work or mechanical work, we would say an estimate of X percent includes mechanical work or electrical work, and the main contractor would then have to indicate in his response which subcontractor that holds that class of work they will use, either from that area, if it was included in the empowerment impact assessment, or from anywhere that he can bring them, but that then holds that lower grading as part of the development of that contract.
Honourable Heron?
Sorry, I just want to clarify. So is this empowerment impact assessment, is this a provincial policy, or is it national legislation, or is it the PFMA? Where does it come from?
It's a provincial thing that we do because it's a provincial initiative in DDPW specifically, and apart from that, when the preferential procurement legislation was reviewed, they did ask impact as to how do we come up with the way in which we put our specifications together. They evaluated that and they actually included it now as part of the new preferential procurement regulation that was issued a couple of years ago, so that you would see there is a provision that speaks about undertaking an empowerment impact assessment.
Thank you. If I may just further, we have also been promoting this with our national colleagues and have actually now shared our guideline and documentation with the with across the provinces with the National Department of Public Works as well to consider. Then the last questions were around the full-time equivalents and trying to understand how that all fits together. So it is on the basis that while there was an increased number of jobs created, when you turn that into the time period for the calculation of a full-time equivalent, there are fewer of those. So we had more shorter-term employment opportunities across the roads contracts in terms of the work that was delivered than could make up the total number of the full-time equivalents in terms of the target that was set. I hope that makes sense. Then the last question in terms of any other reasons around the completed within. Oh, and my apologies, there was also a question around whether the roads project, the Khoda project, was completed on time and in budget. To my knowledge, it was. I don't have that detail with me. I can check. Obviously, when this is one of our debates with National, if I may, about how the indicators are calculated or set. Because an agreed time ultimately means that in infrastructure, you've got a project and you've got a contract completion date. And then if the scope is adjusted or there are rain days that are approved and so on, then clearly the date shifts, the timeline shifts, but it is still agreed. And the same with the budget, that if you're going to add additional work or something else needs to be done because you've got unforeseen conditions on site and so on, clearly the budget is going to change and has to still be considered as agreed. But often there is a view that the agreed budget has to be what was set originally, as opposed to understanding the nature of infrastructure construction and delivery, that actually does change depending on the conditions and the environment. Generally, a contract would only be deemed to be late if a contractor moves into penalty. So in other words, you've reached the contractual handover completion date and you're now sitting in penalties. Then it would be deemed to be not completed within the agreed time. So that one, it is quite a tricky one to manage and to understand in terms of its feedback. in terms of the, therefore, the projects also completed with agreed time, you do have, and we've got some of our projects where there are conditions on site. Sometimes if we've got protest action or there's a delay or something like that, and we do have that particularly with some of our education sites, understandably, and that, of course, is also going to have a knock-on effect. Chair, I think I've answered all the questions. Thank you.
Thank you, HOD. Members, are there any additional questions on the presentation? If not, thank you very much for that. Minister, I think this is also the time that we will excuse you before we get into the next presentation. Members, if you allow a minute or two, just so that the presentations can be prepared.
Good afternoon, Chairperson and members of the committee. Thank you very much for the opportunity to present to you a bit of an overview of the Expanded Public Works Program. Once again, my name is Richard Peterson. I'm the Chief Director responsible for this Chief Director that we call EPWP. Just for your information, this Chief Directorate actually consists of three directorates. The one directorate is Expanded Public Works Coordination and Compliance Monitoring. The other one is Construction Innovation and Empowerment. That's where we do contractor development, skills development, the empowerment impact assessments that the HOD referred to. And then the third directorate is the Masaki Sizwe Bursary Program, as well as the Professional Development Program that flows out of that. So today I'm speaking essentially about this one directorate that is the coordination side of the EPWP program. And I'm just going to briefly take you, this is the content of the presentation. Just quickly, what the intent of the EPWP program is, what is the policy background context, our role and function, the universal principles for engagement on public employment programs such as this one, some information about the grant allocations that was received over the third phase of the program, phase three, which was a five-year period, and the overall performance on the program for phase three, as well as what our phase four targets are. This is, we've just commenced with phase four, and I'll tell you what our performance targets are, and then one or two slides on just one or two successes on the program. Okay, so firstly, colleagues, the public employment programs, I think we all familiar with them because, I mean, they all are meant to respond to challenges that we have in our economy around unemployment, poverty, and so on. They're universally known. There are many well-known ones around the world, you know, India, Bangladesh, a lot of the emerging countries. But you even find these public employment programs in well-established first world countries as well because, unemployment is a challenge all around the world. And so this program was introduced as one of the government's responses to unemployment, and there was an anti-poverty strategy devised nationally in 2003 already. So the program is already in its 16th year of operation. And the aim of the program essentially is to draw significant numbers of unemployed people into productive work and as far as is possible, a company that's productive work with some form of training. This is a nationwide program covering all spheres of government as well as state-owned enterprises. So every sphere of government is expected, and they do in fact participate in the program. And the program's essence is about reorientating line function budgets and utilizing conditional grants on these government projects to look for expanding the creation of work opportunities. The idea of this program is not to displace this EPWP work opportunities, is not to displace permanent work with it, because the program in its essence is shorter term employment. So you don't want people to be drawn out of full-time employment into the short-term job opportunities because, you know, maybe of differences in wage rates and so on. And again, internationally, these public employment programs are seen as part of employment and social protection schemes. So this is the essence of what the program is about. And the policy context, quickly, the program is approved nationally through the National Cabinet. But if we look at the National Development Plan in Chapter 3, there's a particular reference to EPWP as a response to, as I said, unemployment, poverty, and even inequality. So the reason for the existence of this program is the fact that the formal economy is unable to absorb significant numbers of people into permanent employment. So because there are so many people unemployed, this is, as I say, one of government's responses to say, what can we do whilst the economy is unable to absorb all these people into permanent employment to provide them some form of income and social support, other than as opposed to handing them a grant, you know, handing them out money. And then there's also the social protection issue that I've just spoken about. The reference is made on that in Chapter 11 of the NDP. So the EPWP program is referenced directly in the NDP through Chapter 3 and Chapter 11, particularly Chapter 3. And if we look at the projections that Chapter 3 speaks about around economic growth and so on, unfortunately, we are nowhere near what was envisaged when the NDP, in fact, was first published. So where there was some hope of, you know, positive economic growth, we actually, as we know, in negative economic growth for most of the time. So when the program is even more important now than it was when it was conceptualized, because our economic situation has decreased and declined the way it has. Okay, so the objective of phase four, essentially, and this is the definition, the stated objective is to provide work opportunities and income support to support poor and unemployed people through the delivery of public and community assets and services, and thereby contributing through development. This is the stated objective of EPWP. It's been like this actually through phase three as well. And the intention, the impact, envisaged impact of the program is that firstly there is employment creation, there is income support that's provided through the earning of this wages, the earning of the wages as opposed to just receiving it through some other handout method, and then the development of community assets and services. So one of the fundamental point issues here is that the program needs to be part of the essence of what government is about. It's not, it is in the delivery of in the execution of our function, we're looking to expand opportunities for employment. That is what it is about. Okay. And then, you know, there are these universal principles that the International Labour Organization actually sets around how to approach engagement of people on programs of this nature. And the first one is that, you know, there should be the adherence to a minimum, a stated minimum wage. And for this program, there is a stated minimum wage. There is a particular ministerial determination, because remember, the program stands slightly with one foot outside the formal employment dispensation, right? So there is a particular ministerial determination that determines the basic conditions of employment. It is, in fact, the program fits, you know, within the Basic Conditions of Employment Act, but that determination of the minister sets out the specifics around the EPWP program. So the minimum wage at the moment is, I think, 101 rand or something. Nobody really pays that, especially in our province. Most of them pay much more than that. But you're not allowed to pay less than that minimum wage. And the ministerial determination also sets out other conditions of employment. Leave, maternity leave, and things like that. Also, unemployment benefits and so forth. The selection of workers needs to be based on a clearly defined process and criteria, and it has to be transparent. So, you know, the selection should happen in accordance with, as I say, fair, transparent and fair processes. And there is, in fact, now, last year, there was a national Department of Public Works, who is the national coordinator of the program, actually published a guideline also around recruitment and selection of beneficiaries that speaks to the same principles. And the work, as I said, needs to enhance public goods and community services. Mm-hmm. And then projects, depending on its nature, there should be a minimum labor intensivity linked to those projects. So if you look at an infrastructure project, for example, the labor intensivity on an infrastructure project would be very different from social sector type project, where you engage, for example, home-based carers in the health sector. Those people are the 90% of, or more even, of those beneficiaries. That is paid to them is salaries, as opposed to an infrastructure project where a large portion of the spend on an infrastructure project could be on the materials and the machinery and so on, and the smaller portion will be on wages. Yeah. Okay, so as I said, this program, there's a incentive grant attached to it nationally. So depending on how implementing bodies perform, they can be rewarded almost with this incentive grant that's attached to the program. And I've just put together the slide to give the committee a feel for what the monetary value was of the incentive grant allocations that came to our province for the phase three over the last 5 years. This first slide is the allocations to the municipal, the metro, the city of Cape Town, and then the other district municipal areas. I didn't break it down into the municipalities, but if you're interested, I can provide you with that information. But as a aggregate, the allocation over the past 5 years in grant money on this program to the municipalities was 334 million rand, And the next slide shows the allocations to provincial departments over the same period. Again, there's the breakdown of the departments and the different years, but the total there at the bottom, about almost 300 million rand, was allocated to the provincial departments for as an incentive grant to further implement and enhance and expand the EPWP projects that might be happening in the province and in the municipalities. So this is only, this money was only meant to augment the monetary allocations that municipalities or implementing bodies make out of their own budgets, as I said before. So you use your own money and then you also get these incentive grant allocations from national to enhance and expand the program. Just quickly, members, I've made a slide for you on how what the performance was of the municipalities. This is municipal and provincial countrywide. How we performed against our targets. Now, the target for the province for this phase three was 320, I had the number there in front, 300, and that's the performance. Okay, there's the target, yes, and there's the performance, 337, 978. So if you look, just scan your eyes across the performance in the country, we actually, the target was about 6 million national. We had a target of 6 million work opportunities. But we didn't quite make it nationally. So municipalities, firstly on this side, you see the provincial target was 1.8 million work opportunities over the 5 years. That is countrywide. And the Western Cape's target at the bottom there in blue is 174,000 work opportunities. The province, the provincial departments, and we achieved 139,000 work opportunities. And the municipal sphere in the Western Cape, the target was 228,000 and we achieved 198,000. So overall, the target for our province was 402,000 and we achieved 300,000 odd. Yeah, and just this is work opportunities, and just coming back to the FTEs, as Jackie has explained, the FTEs is the full-time equivalent. In other words, is the number of person days, if you want to calculate it, the number of person days worked divided by 230 will give you the, in other words, what is the comparison with what is a full-time job? Full-time job is 230 days of employment. And so when we talk about the FTE is conversion and comparing that to what a full-time job would be. This slide, again, gives the performance in the for the past financial year. This is the financial year 2018 to March 2019. And again, the province, the provincial departments achieved an 80% performance, and the municipalities actually exceeded the target for the past year. So the target there was 48,900, and they just about exceeded that target by 1%. This is the phase four. We are now in phase four of the EPWP cycle. So this is the fourth five-year cycle that we just commenced. And this cycle started on the 1st of April, and it will run until 2019, until 2014, March. 2024. Yes, thanks, Jackson. And these are the overall national targets So, you know, based on our experiences over the last 5 years and everything that's happening in the country economically wise and so on, the target has actually been slightly lowered from 6 million work opportunities for the phase 3 to 5 million for phase 4. And this sets out the targets over the different sectors for the different financial years. This is the Western Cape's targets for phase 4. The targets for the provincial departments, the aggregates, and then for the municipalities. If you're interested in the detail of you know the targets per municipality, we can let you have it. Then, you know, Chair, we often get asked about impact, and especially impact around permanent employment. We often have to make the point, though, that this program, its core aim is not to create full-time employment. In fact, the program is a response to the fact that the economy is unable to, you know, create full-time employment. And so because of all these unemployed people, this is why the program exists. So when we have a perfect world where, you know, we have zero unemployment, this program really should no longer exist. That's the dream, nirvana. But because we get these questions about, you know, we still would like to see the program make some impact around permanent employment. I mean, it's great if we can do that. And we know that the program does actually, if people are engaged on the program, their chances of getting employment is enhanced. You know, a whole group, number of them do find permanent employment. A lot of them are better able, they are more employable, which is part of the aim of the program, actually. That's the aim, to improve the employability of participants. We can't guarantee full-time employment, but we can assist in making them more employable through the skills that we provide them. And often a lot of these beneficiaries find a better means of fending for themselves, even if they can't find work in the formal economy. They can still find a way to fend for themselves in the informal economy by, you know, doing other things. And so we did run a little survey to see what we've got a EPWP program in the department, a maintenance program, and we did a survey about 2-3 years ago to see if we can make some assessment of how this program, and we found, you know, some interesting information. I mean, you know, one of the things is that we struggled to actually get hold of a lot of them because they change, you know, the contact details and so on is difficult. But of those that we did find, about half of the people we tried to contact, we could get hold of, and we found that about 25% of them were actually in employment still, full-time employment, some others in part-time employment, but they were actually employed. And we have seen, there has been a national similar survey done a few years back, and they found the same kind of number trends, you know, between 25% and 30% of the people that were engaged on an EPWP project or program actually found themselves in permanent employment, which as I say, it's a great consequence of the program, although, you know, we're looking to, it's more about the employability as opposed to guaranteeing people employment. And So you know that survey we did, and it did kind of confirm what we already knew, that is kind of the number trends. You know, it's in the mid 20s to 30% let people find, you know, permanent employment, which we think is great. And so we just, you know, pulled up some small numbers of the recent employments, again, examples of people who actually found permanent employment as a result of being on this program. We've got plenty of them. We just took out a few examples from these districts. This is absolutely not an exhaustive list. There are plenty of other examples, and here we have a few other faces of people that, again, from, you know, being EPWP beneficiaries to becoming data capturers and then admin positions in municipalities. And, you know, there are a few examples in these municipalities. One guy, Dennis, there on the left, he's now a manager there in Cape Agulhas Municipality. Fire, again, fire services. A lot of these municipalities have got training programs for people that are firefighters and so on. And again, a number of them got permanent employment. I was at a ceremony the other day again in Hermanus, where quite a number of people that came through their programs, not just firefighting, but also community safety in the and tour guides, you know, over the festive seasons and so on, a whole host of programs, you know, where we do have examples of people that have found permanent employment as a result of having been on the expanded public works program of some description for some period of time. We've got also other skills programs that is also linked to the expanded public works program, and again we've got fantastic success stories there of people who have come through from being an EPWP beneficiary to being put on one of our skills programs to becoming fully qualified artisans. Some of them actually small emerging contractors having their own businesses and so on. Chairperson, I try to respond to the question that was put to us in your communication. I hope I have done a good enough job, but I'm happy to take some questions if there are any. Thank you.
Thank you very much, for the presentation. Members, can we just find out what is the reason for the circulation? Because
we've got public works with us, Chair, maybe they can it's running off the central system, plus we are now facing the sun, and I'll make a mental note that we start using that room.
No, it's not about that. I just thought that ventilation is all right. Thank you, members. Are there any questions? Honourable America, then Honourable Mitchell, and then Honourable Van der Westen.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, if one looked in phase three, the grant allocation to the various municipalities and to provincial departments, it is quite substantial. You know, it's over half a billion rand that is being allocated to the various municipalities and provincial departments. Is there a tracking mechanism to ascertain whether those allocations have been spent for the intended purpose? And if not, you know, whether funds could be, you know, recouped and redirected to those municipalities or those provincial departments that actually do spend it for what it's intended for. That's the one question. The second question, Chair, is that is there any prescriptive way in which you could possibly, or is it up to the municipality or the the department to see fit as to which programs they're going to fund with the grant allocation. Because the reason being is when you look at for the 2018 and 19 period, I mean the education department was allocated substantially so much more than the other departments like health and even settlements and transport and public works. Is there an explanation for that? Is there, a some sort of motivation as to why education, is it to employ teacher assistants, for example, that you don't find out here, or is it just to appoint additional grass cutters at school? That's the questions. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, Honourable America. If I may, I want to, if we could go to page 6, with regards to the, in particular, the selection of each worker must be done on a clear set of criteria to minimize patronage and abuse during the selection process. Now, I understand that it's a national program, but I also understand that provincially there's an oversight and accountability mechanism from the department side. Is there some sort of clear process or guidelines that can be given, or I don't want to use the word prescribed, to municipalities, because it's on the ground in municipalities where there's the big fight when it comes to EPWP. And I'm just thinking about my constituency and how the fight in the central Karoo is. And then just for interest sake, we definitely want the breakdown per municipality, because that's important. I don't know if we could, members agree with me, that it gets done not in districts but in actual municipalities. And then just and then I wanted to know with regards to the municipalities, does municipalities have a central database that is linked to the provincial and national reporting database? And if so, could we get that for the municipalities, if not, or indication of which municipalities are linked, and if not, is there guidelines that would ensure that that happens? And then I just want to make a comment under the success stories. Although it's an achievement, it's quite scary to think that the biggest or the largest group of respondents are between the ages of 35 and 49, and particularly 19 to 34 also. I mean, that's the youth market where people are starting to grow in careers, or should be, but it just shows where we are as a country. Honourable Van der Westhuizen.
Thank you, Chair. Before listening to your presentation, my question would have been, to what extent can we expand on the quota or the allocation for the Western Cape? But now it seems to me that in some cases we're struggling to really fully utilize the allocation. The second one is, I'm always concerned that this is a program that could be seen as exploiting vulnerable people, and I've always told myself, but listen, there's training linked to this. It's like an internship, etc. And many of our children do work for a modest wage until they've completed the internships and so on. But if you could expand on the training given to EPW workers and whether it's really making a difference in their lives, because the take-up numbers that you've presented is very low to my mind. Thank you.
Members, are there any other questions?
Just wondered, maybe just for information or clarification, what is the difference between the CWP and the EPWP?
The one is here and the other one is in local government.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the questions. The first question about the tracking of the grants, through the Chair, Mr. America. Look, the grants are nationally allocated, right? So it gets allocated through National Treasury to the municipalities, and there's actually a very stringent reporting regime around it. Municipalities are expected to, on a regular basis, actually there's a set reporting template on which they must report on the spending, as well as obviously the achievement of the EPWP work opportunity targets. So yes, they are, and we also play a role in ensuring that reporting happens and so on from the provinces side. How do bodies choose which programs to fund? There isn't a. I mean, if you talk about municipalities to begin with, I mean, they don't get prescribed to which projects they have to implement, because remember, this program runs across all the activities of government, right? So it's also segmented into the different sectors. So we talk about the social sector, which is all your social related programs, environmental sector, which, you know, cleaning of rivers, all the environmental related programs, and then infrastructure, you know. And so we know that the needs are multiple, you know. So within the municipality, the council, they make the decisions on what programs they're going to implement. But when it comes to EPWP and the grant funding that is awarded to municipalities through the grant, the program, the projects have to be EPWP compliant projects. So they have to look to optimize low cost labor and so on. There are these prescripts, and also there are these minimum wages, as I said, that's prescribed in the ministerial determination and so forth. What just on the minimum wage and wages in general, this program allows implementing bodies to pay a rate lower than the national minimum wage. And this does speak to the question the other member raised, and I'll respond to that in a minute. And so, because the idea is to expand, you know, to absorb as many people onto the that's the philosophy now. You know, you can make arguments, I think, in both directions about the value of this thing and so on, but we've got this challenge in our country, you know. The question is, how do we respond? This is one way of responding. It might not be perfect. We do see a lot of positive results, you know. And yes, I think as government, nationally, provincially, we're all always looking for better ways to do it and other ways to do it. But, you know, our experience, and I've been in the program for 15 years when it started, I've been, you know, with the program. And we know that, you know, it has changed. It's made a difference. Again, as I say, it's not perfect and so on. You know, on the education, the question on what projects education use, again, remember education, they have there's the social element to education, which is the education itself, and education through the provision of the infrastructure that we do for them, building of the schools and so on. There's also the infrastructure sector that they are part of. So they actually get grant funding from two sides, okay, for the infrastructure, the schools, or not the schools per se, but on the infrastructure side, and for the social. And one of the flagship projects in education that they spend this on is early childhood development, which is, you know, we know how important that phase of our development of our children is. So I think that money is very well spent in education. Mr. Through you again, Chair, to Mr. Mitchell, yourself actually. The question on the recruitment guidelines, I did make reference to it. There is in fact a nationally published set of guidelines on recruitment. I think I did make it available when I answered the questions recently from the...
Yes.
But if I didn't, we'd be happy to let you have it, okay? It's a national set of guidelines. On recruitment, again, there isn't a prescribed methodology of how implementing bodies must recruit. We have, and this is why we always emphasizing the principles. You know, we don't say to a municipality, you must use method X, use a box and, you know, draw names out. That has got its good elements and bad, you know. Or we always advise municipalities especially to have a central database, you know, remember indigent grants. With the indigent grants, municipalities normally have got that record of who the indigents are, people in their municipalities and so on, and that's a good point of departure, we think. So we always advise them, please, you know, there's also the National Department of Labor has also got a database, you know. There's so many databases floating around. But the bottom line is what I and, you know, us will always propagate when we go out there is to say, please steer away from political interference in the appointment of or selection of your beneficiaries. This program is not meant to be benefiting anybody other than people that are poor in your municipality. And everybody that is poor is equally entitled to an opportunity when it comes around. So that's the message that we're not everywhere, and you know, we're not policemen. Things don't always go perfectly. We know there's things that go wrong. Sometimes it has to be fixed by the councils, you know. The breakdown per municipality of the grant allocation, we will certainly provide you that. In fact, those allocations are actually in the Division of Revenue Act in DORA, but we will also, you know, make it available to you. It's not a problem. We'll do it with pleasure. Then there was a question if municipalities have a central database for reporting. There is the central reporting system, national, but I answered the question on the database here. They don't, I mean, we encourage them to have something that is transparent and, you know, away from interference of any kind. The comment on age, we note that. I just have to just again put that rider. That was a very small little sample that we tested. But yes, it just shows the desperation that there is out there for work. I mean, the colleagues Jackie and Chantal here can tell you how, you know, for the lowest level of job, even now in government, we're just busy with filling level 5 positions, which is the lowest level in government. 3,000 applications we got for that job. So, you know, it's desperate. It's desperate, and everywhere, even in a program like this, people are desperate for any kind of employment.
It's a major critique. say that we recently completed the graduation ceremony for our provincial traffic officers. And for the, I think in terms of the intake for 30-35 posts, we had over 18,000 applications for people who want to try to train to be a traffic officer.
Yes.
So it definitely does speak to that point about people trying to find opportunities.
Yes.
Sorry.
No problem. And then there was a question, to what extent can we expand were you talking about the numbers? We're always looking for opportunities. That's part of, you know, our job as well as the doing the advocacy. We always also share with our implementing bodies, you know, other that good practice examples and so on. But you know, we I think the opportunities are there. It's the pressure that we have in our economy and so on. You know, even whereas this program is meant to respond to the challenges in the economy, it's also affected by the challenges of the economy. You know, Chantal, you want to say something?
Chair, through you, if I can just add, for the first time this year and for the next 2 years, the Treasury, the provincial Treasury, our provincial Treasury has actually topped up the grant with 30 million rand annually, so distributed between all of the departments. But that was also a first, and that is in support of the EPWP program.
Yes, thanks, Chantal. Just on the question of exploitation of vulnerable people, I don't know if this is more a philosophical question than a factual one, but I have said, you know, the last thing that this program wants to do is to exploit people. In fact, on the contrary, is trying to provide people with some form of income support. We also, the training, and that was the other part of your question through the chair, the training opportunities that we have, and we're always looking to, you know, because as I say, it's about trying to improve the employability. So we're always looking to attach some form of training to the employment opportunity. Now, depending on the nature of the project, we are more or less able to do it. I mean, if I mentioned the early childhood development program, which is a formal program that runs over longer than a year, people get a formal entry level qualification, and that actually sets them on the path of participating in a formal way in the education sphere. The same with home-based care. Those people get formal training that and they, in fact, I've just been also earlier in the year to a diploma, you know, graduation ceremony of these people, and in their numbers there are people that get formal qualifications. There's pharmacy assistance, for example, in health, another excellent program where people get formal training. In other places, like in our space, for example, and this is just one element. Remember, we do a lot of skills development as well in other places, and I'm responsible for some of them in our department. But depending on the nature of our projects and the duration of it, in the infrastructure sector, we are able to provide people with different types of training. Sometimes the projects, on a maintenance project, for example, the project might only be for 6 months, right? And you are not able to give somebody a formal qualification on a six-month project. But our longer-term projects and where people are engaged for longer, we and even on our smaller contracts, projects, we teach them some basic skills around what is required for that job at that point in time. And so, you know, participants are also able to participate in more than one project. You know, they can be engaged on another one further down the line and acquire more skills and so on. But there isn't one size-fits-all arrangement with training. It runs parallel with what the nature of the program is around. You know, when we do environmental programs, for example, people get taught about environmental sustainability and recycling and all of those things as well. When they are involved in that kind of programs, for example, in Minnesota. Lastly, the question by Mr. Mbumbi, I hope I pronounce your surname correctly, sir. You asked what the difference or what the comparison is between the Community Works Program and EPWP. The Community Works Program is, in fact, a sub-program of the Expanded Public Works Program, but it is managed, yeah, through the Department of COCTA, the Department of Local Government and Traditional Affairs. But it is also an EPWP program that just managed, you know, differently. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Members, are there any further questions? If not, HOD, CFO, sir, thank you very much for the presentations. Thank you very much for the manner in which we could engage. It's always nice to have you here. I think with every meeting, and we only had three. We always learn. So please excuse the 110 questions. We're slowly getting there. Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. Members, we're just going to remain behind for admin. Okay. Members, can we do the minutes of the 16th of July? Please check your attendance and
I move that we accept the minutes, check.
Alright, we're going to get there once we finish with page 2. Page 1, edits or amendments. Page 2, any edits or amendments? If not, agree to. Minutes of the 30th of July, page 1. Page 2, any edits or amendments? If not, agree to. Can I get a proposal in a second, or just for the minutes? Thank you, Honorable America and Navesta. Members, if there's nothing else, before I forget, are there any recommendations from this meeting, Honorable Heron?
Thanks, Chair. Not maybe necessarily arising out of this meeting, but yesterday or the day before, we got a copy of the Provincial Property Committee's annual report that was tabled at the Cabinet. And I think it would be useful for this committee at some point to be briefed by the full PPC on their role and on their annual report for 2018. So if we can resolve that, we invite them to present to us.
Absolutely. Agreed.
Perhaps we could also get a copy of the, let's call it, the good practices when recruiting people for EPWP programs. They said there were guidelines. I don't think we've received it in our term.
No. We haven't received it, but the committee coordinators got it down for request from the department. Anything else, members? If not, thank you very much. Have a good afternoon. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you, Chair.